Transformation is inevitable, but it doesn't have to take forever. What if you could see the obstacles before they happen, sidestep the common mistakes, and drive change faster than ever? That's exactly what we're here to do. Welcome to Transformation Unfiltered, the podcast where HR professionals share their stories about how they've hit fast forward on their transformation efforts and built legacies as world-class people leaders and change makers. And now, here's the show.
And sometimes we go into relationships and we expect one thing and realize that's not it. And you have to decide, am I going to recalibrate or am I going to exit? I chose to recalibrate. So he showed his hand. I knew what he thought. I knew how he felt. I'm going to recalibrate how I talk to you, how we interact. It's going to be different. If it's a manager where recalibration isn't there and you need to go, you need to go. I've always said we spend so much of our waking hours at work. To spend time in a job where you don't feel like you're respected, that's too much of your wait time. And the toll it takes on you can take place in ways you don't even realize it. Like, I literally had my hair thinning on the top of my head from stress. I didn't realize how bad it was. And sometimes you don't realize how bad something is until you leave. And that's with any relationship, whether it's job or personal. Sometimes you don't realize it until it's over and you get to breathe. Like, oh my gosh, that was bad. Like, I went through some stuff. And then you learn from it and you look for signals on how to make sure it doesn't happen again. And that could even be in the questions you ask in an interview.
I don't trust you, and I'm not sure about your commitment to the organization. Think about being on the receiving end of those two statements. How would you react as an employee? How would that make you feel? If it were me in that situation, it would be a gut punch. And there's no way that I could say that I wouldn't get defensive in that moment and want to push back on both of those. But that's an actual situation that happened with this week's guest as she was trying to navigate her way through a career where she felt stalled. And when she asked her manager what the issue is, that was the response that she got. And to make it even worse, when she explained her perspective, her manager said, oh, no big deal, never mind, that makes sense, and moved on. How would you successfully navigate that scenario and come out the other end where your career hasn't been tanked? We're going to answer those questions in today's conversation with Erica Coffey. So Erica is someone who has 2 decades of experience in teaching, coaching, and leadership, and has devoted her career to helping people and organizations grow through inclusion and equity. She believes transformation happens when we listen deeply and ask the questions that matter most. And as a DEIB practitioner, Erica creates brave spaces for dialogue and connection where everyone feels seen and valued. Her work empowers schools, companies, and nonprofits to build cultures rooted in belonging and sustainable change. And we're pumped to have her on the show. Erica, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited.
Yeah, it should be a good conversation. Looking forward to chatting with you. So as usual, we just rip the Band-Aid right off and get into the messy parts of what happened. So share with the class, what was that moment in your career where you found yourself in a sticky situation and in the moment you thought, oh, I really stepped in it this time?
Yeah, so I was in my career. I knew I wanted to advance forward in it, but to do that, I need to go back to school. And so I worked again in my master's, my job paid for it. So that was 3 years of a master's with a 1-year-old at the time who was 4 by the time I graduated. And I still wasn't getting the promotion I wanted. And so I was like, what is wrong with me? What am I doing wrong? So I started looking up reasons why women don't get promoted. And what I settled on, or what was a common theme, was I wasn't dressed up enough. I wasn't doing my hair enough. I wasn't wearing enough makeup because I wore no makeup at all. And so I actually started to change my outward appearance in hopes to get a promotion. New clothes, spending more time on my hair, actually buying makeup, doing all these things in hopes that it would get me looked at to be promoted. And I just didn't feel good about myself doing it.
So I think a lot of people can relate to what you just described, but I want to dig in a little bit into sort of your plan of action. You researched. So I think you and I have something in common where we're both nerds and we study our way out of a problem. Where did you find these signals that indicated to you, hey, this is what I need to do? Because when you described it, I was like, did you research in Cosmo? Is that where you got that from? Like, what happened there?
did a good old research on Google and looked at, gosh, it's been a while, but I believe some of the articles was knowing that the person to give me promotion was a male and anyone involved was male. What is it about me as a Black woman that I may need to do to be seen as a leader? And everything said, women need to look more professional. They need to look like they spend time getting ready. And it was that signal, like the spending time to get ready needs to be something very evident because it shows that you take care of yourself, apparently, supposedly, according to these various articles. And so it was like how you dress. Make it look like it takes time for you to get ready in the morning for them to see that you mean business. And so I did those things. I'm a wake up and go kind of person. And so I really, that's a taxing task I gave myself.
So it's interesting that you're describing that because I think back to my early career trajectory and the things that I heard from leaders at that time is you got to look the part. You got to dress for the job that you want versus the job that you're in. And I always looked a little sideways at it because I thought it was odd because we're in the ultimate meritocracy, right? Our numbers and our performance should do the speaking versus how much polish you have on your shoes. So you came up with a solution, but before you came up with that particular solution, tell us a little bit more about what you had actually accomplished up until that point that you checked off the box that prompted you to ask the question in the first place. What else do I need to do?
Oh, that's a great question. I had proven to be a good worker, to be a good colleague. I actually had one of, I'll say, managers say that I was at the job more than they were. I was doing all the right things. I went back to school. I got my master's. Like, I was doing everything that I thought I needed to prove. I had a good reputation, no blemishes on my record. And so it was like, something's missing. What is it that I'm missing? And that's how I landed on, I need to change my physical appearance.
Tell me a little bit more about the work that you were doing and particularly the feedback that you're getting. Did anything in terms of development and next steps in your career come up in your one-on-ones as part of a development plan? And if so, what was the feedback that you were getting then?
Oh, I actually wish there had been one-on-ones. That may have been part of the problem. I chose for there to be one-on-ones, right? I've gone back to school. I've done all the things. Can we meet? Because I'd like to talk about next steps. Here's where I see myself going. I want to stay here. Can you help me stay here? Because I know I'm an asset, without a doubt. And I just felt like I just kept getting the runaround. I've served on any committee I was asked to be on, any council. I volunteered for anything. I don't know what more I can do.
A lot of what you're saying is personally relatable because I experienced a lot of those things as I was coming up in my career. And what you just described makes me think of that leadership and development philosophy that was common at the time. And it might still be common at this point where the edict is employees drive their own development. And here you are in that situation, you're looking for the path to get to the next step, but you're the one chasing it instead of your managers and your leaders guiding you through the process. When you think through that experience and you think through what leaders should have done at that point, what should they have been doing at that point to help you or anybody else in your position get to the next step? What are those best practices that clearly were not present at the time?
Here's a lot that could have been done. One was to have those meetings with me. And when I'm telling you I want to grow and I'm coming to you to set this career path, help me do it. Come help me figure out those opportunities. Who are the mentors I should seek out? Is there a sponsor somewhere? Are there workshops I can attend? Because everything I've poured into this job is because I love the job and because I love the place where I am. And I would say, like, I'm trying to pay it back. You paid for 3 years of me to be in a master's program, and I am grateful. Help me give it back here. And so I had to do things on my own. Things that they didn't even know I was doing. And I'll say my bosses didn't even know. I'm on this. I'm doing this. I'm on this council. I've been working with this teacher. I've been helping out this group. Because what I ended up saying was, if you're not going to find the opportunities for me, then I'm going to have to start finding those opportunities myself that are going to help me exit this place. So if I'm telling you I want to stay, you're telling me you want me to stay, but it seems more like lip service. Then that's a sign to me that, okay, in that time, I'm just going to use this place. use it for good. I'm going to keep doing a great job, but I'm going to use it to get all the experiences I can so that when I'm ready to exit, I've got a resume that shows a full array of activities, of participation and skills.
The one thing that I'm thinking about when you described what you did, you mentioned that your manager wasn't even aware of some of the things that you were involved in. And what I'm thinking about is, what were you doing from a self-promotion perspective? And I'm going to put this caveat in here. You and I are often told that it's a bad thing to be promoting ourselves internally or advocating for ourselves. I actually look at it as advocating for yourself, because if you don't do it, nobody else is going to go out of their way to do it. And that's what I hear from your conversation. So tell me a little bit more about the things that you were doing internally to raise your profile and bring awareness to the value that you were bringing to the team.
Yeah. So I started working with people in higher positions than me. I chose them as mentors. I actually went up to people and said, hey, I'm trying to grow here. I would love to see how this part of our organization works. Are you willing to take me on? What can I help you with? And I did that with multiple people. And these are people I respected. And so it wasn't just about what can you give me, but I actually want to give back to you as well. And so that grew my experience, and it grew what I did. It grew what I learned. And I was able to go back to my manager and say, did you know I'm doing XYZ? No, I didn't do that. Right, because I'm trying to grow. I'm doing these opportunities to learn. So I sought out those people in my organization who believed in me and who were willing to let me learn and to help me grow. And they understood my position. They were people I could trust. And I should also say, I stopped with all the makeup. I stopped with all the clothes because clearly they weren't working. And in the end, like, I realized the problem wasn't me. The problem was my manager and big boss. It was this expectation they had. It was their thoughts. I wasn't doing anything wrong.
So when you describe this situation, it reminds me of a conversation that I have with one of my friends, and also they're also a mentor of mine. And he worked at a large insurance company, and he was experiencing the same thing, where consistently a top performer, he didn't change his appearance and stuff because he's always one of these button down types. I call him a stiff, but he's from the Bahamas and he's excelling. He's got executive presence, all this sort of stuff. And he just hit a ceiling, and he had the opportunity to later on have the conversation with one of his like senior leaders who was, he was on their downline. And he asked them the question, I was always putting myself out for these different positions, but I never got an at bat for it. Why did that happen? And this leader said, I honestly never saw you as the person in that role. And we can take the saw you part however we want to take it. But your story reminds me of that. And what I'm wondering is, everything that you're doing is an effort to be seen and recognized by the people who have influence and a lot of power in terms of your career trajectory. And when you think back to those moments, what was there anything that you could have done differently that would have allowed you to be seen to these people that weren't seeing you for whatever reason?
When I think back on it, because I was with this organization for quite a while, I really don't know what more there could have been. I do know that I trusted a manager and I shouldn't have. And it recalls this one moment when I went in to talk to him about next steps for me. And I'll tell you the ending. I cried the whole 30 minutes on the way home. Because here's what happened. We go in and we're talking. He says, you know what, Erica? I just don't trust you. Like, my heart dropped. I broke out in a nervous sweat and all sorts of things that go through your mind so fast. I'm like, what have I done? What did I do for him to say this? Got together. I said, what do you mean you don't trust me? What did I do? And he said, I'm just not sure about your commitment here. And I said, but I've been telling you, like, I've been so upfront about where I want to be, how I want to grow. And I said, I haven't hidden anything from you. I said, if you think I don't know where I'm going, it's because I'm waiting for the signal from you. Like, I can't know where I'm going because I can't go anywhere without your approval, without your backing, without literally you promoting me into a different position. And he said, oh, okay, that makes sense. He had no idea the impact he had on me. I held it together. But as soon as I got in my car, I cried literally for half an hour. It was actually to a dentist appointment. So I get to the dentist My family there. My husband's like, what's wrong? He told me he didn't trust me. And I was in a shambles. But to him, it was just a flippant comment. I don't trust you. Those are not words that anybody ever wants to hear.
Yeah, I'm putting myself in your situation and I'm thinking through it. I would have had a hard time keeping my cool because it would have been a WTF moment. What do you mean? What are you talking about? So I'm sure those sort of, maybe not that exact situation, but similar situations come up in everybody's career journey. And to me, I would interpret that as a clear signal that this is not the place for me. What I'm curious about is when you think back to that moment and how you kept your composure, what are the things that you did internally to make sure you don't go fly off the handle? Because I'm sure there are people like me who would have flown off the handle and really given that manager a come to Jesus talk from my perspective.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of things I wanted to, but internally, you know, I started to realize he's not someone I can trust, which that's a lot when you realize your manager may not be in your corner. And so I found out about a workshop for winners in my position who wanted to move on. I had to backtrack. I had applied for another job in this organization, which was really embarrassing. Dress up in a suit, whatever, all that, all day. And I didn't get the job. Even though I had done the work and proven I could do it, I didn't get the job. As things started becoming clear, maybe I really do need to leave. But I had a family to think about. I can't just pack up and go somewhere. And I found this retreat and I approached him and I said, hey, I would like to go to this retreat. He gave me a yes with no hesitation. It was an expensive retreat. It was really good, a great workshop. And in this workshop, they all told me to quit. Every single person in there, my mentor said, you should quit this job. And I said, I just don't know if it's the right move. But they gave me fuel to go back. They did fuel me to say, would you move? And there were three M's. I can't remember the second one that they say keep women back. One is marriage. One is mortgage. For the life of me, I can't remember the third. So I think his marriage and mortgage were my main concern. That's why I can't remember the third. So I went back home after that and I talked to my husband. I said, would you move? And he said, absolutely. I said, really? He said, yeah. I said, okay, we've been in our house long enough. We could sell it. We wouldn't be upside down in it. So I actually went back to that manager and I said, thank you so much for sending me to that retreat. It was great. I learned a lot. I have a lot I could pay back here. My husband and I talked about it and I actually think we might move. Like we're thinking about leaving because I want some leadership opportunities. That changed everything. It's because I had heard in the background from other people that he thought he had me on golden handcuffs.
Are you enjoying the conversation? There are more game-changing insights still ahead. If you're passionate about driving transformation and want to stay ahead of the curve, join our Accelerated Transformation community. Send us a quick message on LinkedIn or via email and we'll send you an invite. Now, let's get back to the show.
To that job.
The third M is probably money.
It may be.
Yeah. Now that you bring up the golden handcuffs comment, it might be a good shot that it's money. But I want to sit in that moment for a second. You went to this retreat. You recalibrate with your husband and you're fully prepared to tear the Band-Aid off. And you have this conversation with this manager who earlier said that he can't trust you and he questions your commitment. And you're coming back with exactly what he questioned you on. That takes a lot of courage. So it feels like you were in a I've got nothing to lose kind of moment when you said and did that. How did this manager react?
It was probably something similar like, oh, poop. Because there were a few times we had conversations and oh, poop was a response. I have always been a person. I'm always going to stand up for myself. I'm always going to advocate, especially when what someone is doing is starting to affect my mental health, which then affects my family. And so he had an oh, poop moment. And then the door started to open because I meant what I said. I really meant it. Hadn't thought about moving, but I could. And I had the support of my husband. And so he realized the golden handcuffs actually weren't so golden after all. And then I ended up getting a new position, not exactly what I wanted, but it started to move me in the right direction. And then he left and things got better. And that's when I realized I was right. It wasn't a me problem. It was a them problem.
I like how you phrased that. It wasn't a me problem. It's a them problem. And actually 9 times out of 10, I would maybe 8 times out of 10, I would wager that whenever you feel your career getting stalled, and objectively, you can look through things and you're checking all the boxes and you're still stalled. That's a them problem, not a you problem. Which brings me back to one of the things that you talked about, where you said that at some level, you automatically trusted the managers that you worked with. Looking back on it, how have you reevaluated the trust component of a manager-employee relationship, and how should you navigate that relationship so that it's best serving you? And this is you advising people who might be in that same situation that are listening to this conversation.
Oh, yeah. That's a hefty question. You used the word recalibrate before, and I think that's the perfect term. I think sometimes we go into relationships and we expect one thing and realize that's not it. And you have to decide, am I going to recalibrate or am I going to exit? I chose to recalibrate. So he showed his hand. I knew what he thought. I knew how he felt. I'm going to recalibrate how I talk to you, how we interact. It's going to be different. If it's a manager where recalibration just isn't there and you need to go, you need to go. I've always said we spend so much of our waking hours at work. To spend time in a job where you don't feel like you're respected, that's too much of your wait time. And the toll it takes on you can take place in ways you don't even realize it. Like, I literally had my hair thinning on the top of my head from stress. I didn't realize how bad it was. And sometimes you don't realize how bad something is until you leave. And that's with any relationship, whether it's job or personal. Sometimes you don't realize it till it's over and you get to breathe. Like, oh my gosh, that was bad. Like, I went through some stuff. And then you learn from it and you look for signals on how to make sure it doesn't happen again. And that could even be in the questions you ask in an interview.
So let's talk about those signals. Like, the way you phrased it, sometimes you don't really realize how bad it is until you've exited the situation. What are some of those signals that you need to pay attention to so that you can build your own sort of early warning or detection system to help yourself realize that, hey, I'm in the middle of a toxic scenario and I need to either recalibrate or exit?
So I would say it's knowing, you really have to know, check in with yourself on what it is. What are your non-negotiables, right? And once you know what your non-negotiables are, heading into an interview or heading into a new job, you have to suss out in various ways if your non-negotiables can be met. And that could be using a case study with the manager. What would happen if, you know, in an interview, how would you all handle a situation? Because a lot of times we think in interviews that they're just interviewing us. No, we're interviewing them as well. And so if I have a job, let me just say an example. Actually, I'm coaching a client right now and they have a set. We've worked on a set of non-negotiables. This is okay. You've got those. This client then went in for an interview. Were you able to figure out those non-negotiables? Client said, yes. I said, great. Were they able to meet them? Client said, yes. I said, okay. So you're comfortable with that now, knowing that everything will be perfect, but at least those non-negotiables are there and you were able to suss them out. And sometimes that's by research. I love to research. Speaking with other people, maybe asking the same question multiple times with different people to see if you get the same response. There are ways you can find out what you need to know to be sure you're not putting yourself in that same situation. And trust your instincts. If your gut is telling you something's off, you're probably right, because you've already experienced it once.
I like what you described there and how you actually figure out what those non-negotiables are, but I'm putting myself in the context of somebody that's early mid-career. There's a power imbalance when you're actually trying to figure all that stuff out because you don't want to rock the boat. You're in an environment where I guess there's more weight to optics than there are to achievement. You're in an environment where you may or may not realize that your managers are your blockers. And then you're trying to define your guardrails or your boundaries. That creates risk. So when you take all of those things into account, how do you successfully set those boundaries or effectively set those boundaries and establish your non-negotiables while mitigating the risk of that blowing back on you and being labeled as the difficult employee or a difficult candidate?
I think it depends on what those non-negotiables are about. So I have another client who's looking for a new job and the non-negotiable list is really long and almost impossible. And we've come back as a coach, you don't give answers, you don't give judgment. So I've gone back and I'm like, all right, so you have these non-negotiables. Are they really all 100% non-negotiable? So if the job was 20 miles away, not 10 miles away, is that really a deal breaker? And you really have to sit and think about, are your non-negotiables realistic? And if they are, and they're realistic, and you know they're hard to achieve, then you have to be happy with where you are for now, which is what I told my client, that these are the non-negotiables for you to move on. And they're hard to achieve. And if you're in a place where you're not happy, like, you have to pick and choose your battles. And so if you're waiting for all these to show up, but you're in a job that's not good, but you found a job that hits 4 of the 5 non-negotiables and you still won't take it, you have to stop complaining about the job you're currently in, right? Because at this point, you've made your choice. And so how do you reckon with the choice that you have decided for yourself? So much comes down to, I think, personal talk and personal reflection.
I like how you frame that personal talk and personal reflection as you're describing the situation. Every one of us has this friend in our group. And if you can't think who this is, it's probably you. But we all know that person who's had a bunch of relationships, and every time they encounter a breakup, it's always the other person's fault. Oh, this person has this wrong and that wrong and all that sort of stuff. And if your list of non-negotiables is 50 items long and you can't find the perfect next thing, you have to come to the realization maybe the problem is you, because you're the common denominator in all of these things. So that's good perspective. At some point, there's some level of compromise that you've got to be willing to take on, is what I gathered from that conversation. So as we're going through your experience, eventually you had that breakthrough where you threw the gauntlet down and said, hey, I'm going to be looking at other things because it's what I need to do. And then all of a sudden these doors start opening, and eventually your manager left, and then things got better. How did they get better? What happened?
One, that manager that left, I wouldn't say they left. They were told to leave. And so that's how I really knew. It really wasn't me. It was this manager. And this manager then went on to wreak havoc in other places. But I ended up getting into new roles because of that manager and the oh poop moment. And so it was like, okay, then you can do this role part-time and this role part-time. And I wasn't going to turn it down. Like, I knew it was going to be a lot of work. You can't really do any job 50-50. We all know that. But I was going to do it, and I was going to soak it up. So as time went on, I was growing. I was doing a lot of new experiences. I was spearheading programs. I was revamping things. That manager left. And then we'll call big boss. Big boss left. A new big boss came in that was more aligned with my vision and my values. And so we had good talks. So I got to grow even more. And then another big boss came in. And by this time, I'm no longer reporting to the manager. I'm only really reporting to big boss. And that big boss and I were even more aligned. And I finally got to the position that I wanted. But if I had just rested before, when that manager wasn't giving me opportunities, rather than seeking them out for myself and proving to people and being a good colleague, a good partner, a good friend, I wouldn't have been in a position for when the new boss arrived. I would have been asking to grow, and I wouldn't have had anything to show for it. It would have just been me asking to grow, and that's it. And so that, you know, for myself, doing the extra work, it paid off.
The one thing that I take away from what you're describing is, if your path is blocked and it's blocked by someone else, sometimes you have to create your own path and be intentional about creating that path. When I think about your situation and how you stuck through it for a really long time, I'm wondering, could you have gotten to what you wanted in a shorter amount of time by leaving the organization and looking elsewhere more intentionally? Could you have accomplished that in a shorter amount of time by doing that? What I'm wondering is, if you could have fast-forwarded that experience, how could you have gotten to the end result faster than the experience that you went through? Because that sounds really painful and requires a lot of patience.
Yeah. So I did try my hand at leaving a few times. In the type of organization I was in, even though my situation wasn't ideal, the other organizations that had what I wanted was even worse. And so I'll just say, I really wanted to work in inclusion work, and we know how society responds to that. And so the fact that I had finally gotten it to a place where, oh, actually, we do need someone here who leads up our inclusion work, who does these things, we were actually ahead of the game. And so I did look for other places to go, and I couldn't find anywhere that actually wasn't a step back, because even though it took me so long to push forward, we were ahead of the surrounding area, if that makes sense. But if I had picked up and moved to go somewhere else, a bigger city, yeah, probably. I probably could have moved on faster. And it's all about weighing that cost of that. Would it have been worth to pick up and move uproot my family to do it.
So when I hear you describe it that way, it sounds like the thought process that was going through your head is, as I'm evaluating some of these other options, how closely are they aligned to my personal vision and mission in terms of what I want to accomplish? And if they're not moving me a step closer to that, it's the grass isn't greener on that side. I'm better off staying put. Am I reading that correctly?
You are. There's a lot of lateral moves. I couldn't find anywhere where it would be a step up. And so I just kept pushing forward. As hard as it was with some of the managers and the bosses, I really enjoy the people I work with. And knowing that in most situations, you don't actually talk to your manager or boss that much. It's the people at the same level as you. Had the people who are at the same level of me not been as great as they were, oh, I absolutely would have been gone faster. But I did have support. I did have those mentors. I did have those connections and the strength I needed from within the organization and outside to hold strong. But if I didn't have all of that, there's no way I could have stayed as long as I did.
When you think back across this entire experience, and you think about the key things that it taught you, what are the big lessons that you learned from having gone through that experience?
One of the big lessons I learned was I didn't need to change who I was. I was doing things that made me uncomfortable in my own skin. And that should have been a signal right away. A second thing is sometimes, like I said before, it really is them. It's not you. And you have to figure out when that time comes, have you done everything that you can? Have you put forth your best foot? And if you have and you still aren't getting what you need, then you have a decision to make. And it's up to each individual to decide how long they're going to put up with something. How long can I tolerate this? What's the impact this having on the rest of my life? And if it's just a couple hours during the day, but when I get home, I'm fine, I'm good, then you're all right. If it's, I take it home with me, I can't sleep at night, I'm losing weight, I'm being stressed, then you have a whole nother situation to deal with. Really, it is knowing who you are and staying true to who you are.
When you think through this entire experience and you're looking at what you did to come out the other side, and now you're in a situation where you're talking to that person that's maybe 15, 20 years your junior, trying to navigate that situation, what are the playbook elements that they need to have on their radar so that they can make their own path when they find themselves blocked from getting to where they want to get to?
Yeah, to a younger me, I would say, know your worth. Don't let someone else decide your worth. And also make a plan. Do what you can to educate yourself, to grow in the ways that you want, so that you make it almost impossible to be denied. And if you've done all of the things and you still keep being denied, stop and pause and think about what the real issue is.
If people want to continue the conversation, and I'm sure they will, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
So I do have a website. It's beneaththesurface.net, beneaththe-surface.net. They can find me there. They can find me on LinkedIn, Erica Coffey, C-O-F-F-E-Y. I love having these conversations with people. I love seeing people be the best version of themselves.
Thanks for hanging out with us, Erica. And I think a lot of people are going to be interested in hearing this conversation. When I think through what we talked about, there's a handful of things that I think are worth highlighting. The most important element or lesson that I drew from this conversation is that you've got to make things happen. You've got to have a bias for action. You can't be a passive spectator and have things happen to you and throw your hands up when you find yourself blocked. So the question becomes, okay, how do you make things happen? That starts with a series of questions and actions that you need to take. You need to be ready to ask yourself the question, are we recalibrating or are we exiting? And depending on how you answer either of those questions, that's going to be the starting point for you to build an action plan on how to move forward. Part of that action plan that you described is defining what your non-negotiables are and finding out, even within those non-negotiables, what are the areas that I'm willing to compromise to get to the next step of what I need to get to. And probably the most important thing out of this conversation that I took away from it is the mistake that you made was thinking that the reason I'm not getting promoted is because of some external optical things that I need to fix. The realization that you had coming out of that experience is that 9 times out of 10, it's not a me issue. It's a someone else issue. And you have to figure out and isolate what that issue is and see if it's something that you can work through. So those are the big things that I took away from it. And I think for others who are listening to this conversation, I wanted to highlight those things so you have those in your back pocket as you navigate your way through these challenges. So I appreciate you sharing that with us. For those of you who've been hanging out and listening to the conversation, we appreciate you doing that. If you like the conversation, make sure you leave us a review on your favorite podcast player. Mm-hmm. And then make sure you tune in on the next episode where we'll have another leader hanging out with us, sharing with us those moments in their career that had them stalled and they thought that they were done for. Going through those moments gave them the playbook that allowed them to hit fast forward on their careers. Thank you for hanging out with us and listening to Transformation Unfiltered. If you found today's conversation valuable, leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. It helps us reach more changemakers just like you. Do you know someone who would be great as a guest on our show? Send us a message on LinkedIn or drop us an email. We'd love to hear your recommendation and appreciate the connection. See you next week for another episode featuring an HR leader just like you who's hitting fast forward on change, impact, and transformation.